Hey everyone, welcome into another edition of the Woj Pod. My guest today, Philadelphia 76ers coach Brett Brown. We dig into a lot of details about how he has gone about coaching, nurturing, and teaching his two young franchise stars, Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons. We discuss the organization's responsibility to help them understand the role, both on and off the court, of a franchise star. Brett and I also discussed the unique process of bringing along number one overall pick Markelle Fultz through both physical and confidence issues. We talk about the Sixers' failed recruitment of Spurs star Manu Ginobili in free agency a couple years ago, and much, much more. Here's my visit with Sixers coach Brett Brown. Here with Sixers coach Brett Brown in New Orleans between a back-to-back with the Cavaliers and the Pelicans. Brett, how are you?
I'm doing well. I wished I could speak to you after a win, but that's just not the case. Having said that, I am doing well.
When a team has a back-to-back or a stretch of games where you've got to prepare for ahead of time, what's the routine from a coaching staff's point of view on you're not going to do a shoot-around before you play New Orleans after playing in Cleveland? How do you decide, based on the opponent, based on the schedule, where and when you download them on that next game, which is coming obviously very quickly? Yeah.
For the most part, you do try to find a cookie-cutter template to sort of the rhythm of an NBA season and what the players would guess a coach is going to do. I think we've all learned that people like a routine. And so whether it's a question that you've just asked or what you do when it's game off, like what do you do on the off day, you're always trying to find a rhythm in a routine. And for the most part, it's driven out of health. Like how do you deliver a team to the court ready to play with the highest energy level they could play with? The question that you have asked is influenced by some of those things. And so for me, I like trying to put last night to bed. We played in Cleveland, and now, you know, in 3 hours, we're going to go play New Orleans. How do you connect the dots on some level of symmetry between last night's either good things or bad things or game plan with what you're going to either have to fix or repeat tonight? And you really try to give thoughtful consideration to how do you connect the two games and deliver a game plan when we wake up. You know, we get in at 3 a.m. and we have a coaches meeting at 11 and we meet the team at 12. And for about 45 minutes, we do that. We connect the dots. And then we send them back to their rooms, get them off their feet, but at least deliver some layer of a scouting report to let them think about throughout the course of a day.
Brett, the progress of this still very largely young team, you know, I think especially, and we talked about this last spring, we're talking about Ben Simmons and your determination that he was going to be your playmaker. And I remember you said then, he's going to bring the ball up, he's going to initiate offense. We're not doing it the way LeBron does it or Draymond Green does it as a point forward. And there was, I think, skepticism among people that he could be that. Has this played out, or his ability to handle those responsibilities and the way he has, is this exactly what you imagined? Has he exceeded in some ways what was a pretty unique blueprint for what we see as a traditional point, you know, in the league?
Yeah, he has exceeded. If you had told me when you and I spoke, you know, several months ago, certainly before the season began, that let's just talk about the team winning, because our season, they say we had the hardest schedule to start with, you know, and that's always intimidating at times as a coach when you're expected to start winning and building the program in Philadelphia. And by the way, you still got a bunch of 20-year-olds. And by the way, you're going to give a 6'10 guy who's been a power forward his whole life the main responsibilities of being the primary ball carrier and the point guard. If you had told me that we were going to blink and like this is where we were, and then you were going to add in the fact that, and by the way, these are the numbers that he's producing while he's been our point guard, you'd really step back and say, well, he must be doing something right. and I think that he has exceeded expectations. I feel the area that I'm going to always stay on and continue to grow him is that leadership and on and off the court, the sort of the intellectual side of the position, time, score, situation, and the game. When you just give him the ball and, you know, you just watch him, especially in early offense, his ability and his instinct to pass is elite. That's what he wants to do. And so we all know that growing and being an elite point guard is lots more than that. And those peripheral areas are the areas that, you know, I think most stand out into areas that I need to keep growing him. But his ability to pass, his desire to make other people better, his vision line at 6'10", his breakaway speed, those types of things have been elite.
Because he sat for an entire year before he played here, and you didn't just put him on a shelf, go do your workout, you know, do your individual stuff and leave, that you watched tape with him, that you sat and talked while a season was going on that he wasn't really a part of. Does it make the connection now when you sit and watch tape with him, when you, your coaching staff talks with him, that it's a continuation? It's not a conversation that just started with what it is that you want from a point guard, that the two of you have been doing this and by extension your staff now for 2 years, not just a few months.
It does. And I think that the history that I have spent with his family and the fact that I coached his father and, you know, there is an Australian connection that we have along with that foundation of, you know, intimate time, like real time with him prior to him actually playing NBA basketball. I thought we used that time well. I thought he used that time well. He lets me coach him. I try to coach him as hard as I can. And help him navigate sort of NBA life outside of, just on court stuff. And, I hope that there's a trust level that's built up. And I feel like you weigh all those things up. The conversation that, that he and I have is real. It's easy. And, you know, it's candid. It's just trying to find ways to grow him and get the team to win. But, he's just scratching the surface to what ultimately he is going to be when we start talking about high level of finishing, efficiency, growth of a free throw, you know, the rebuilding of his shot, a comfort level of making and shooting an 18-foot jump shot. Those things are still on the horizon.
Is there a model for you, and you talk about the rebuilding of his shot, is there an example, time you spent with Chip Englin in San Antonio, who may be as good as anybody at that? We've seen the work he's done with a lot of players through there. Is there a blueprint that you have in mind for how you'd like to see it go with him?
I mean, there are lots of examples in San Antonio that, you know, come to my mind, whether it's like you watch the evolution of Tiago split a, you know, free throw. If you watch the evolution of Tony's Parker's, you know, even more and more and more consistent, reliable pull-up. If you take the notion that when we were a part of the Kawhi trade, you know, you bring Chip in and you say, what do you think his shot translates? Can he emerge? Can he grow to be an NBA three-point shooter? There are lessons all over the place that, that Chip would have helped me with and better understanding, like, maybe the next phase.
And I think one of the underappreciated ones in San Antonio is Richard Jefferson, that I think Chip may have elongated his career by how his shot changed there.
I think that's a fair point. And it's such an interesting position. You know, if you went back to – like hitting coaches in Major League Baseball, you know, the growth of that position, the growth of having multiple, you know, people in that position. And basketball, surprisingly and amazingly, really, when you think, like, at the end of the day, the you win or lose, can you put the ball in the hole? That's how our sport is scored. You would think the shooting coach has would been more on a fast track as an emerging position. And it hasn't been. And some of it is, you know, I think this, the industry sort of is recognizing that. I think some of it is like, are you a legitimate shooting coach or are you just a coach that wants to, you know, have an idea about, you know, put your elbow under the ball or hold your follow through and therefore I'm a shooting coach. But he really grabbed a part of the sport and was content in that role and mastered it. And I think Chip is, I think he's the best shooting coach in the NBA and, I think my time with him makes me say that with confidence.
Yeah, I get that sense. You talk to executives in the league, and that's the one position They're always asking for names. Who do you think could be good? Who's out there that we could groom or that they see the value? I think Steve Clifford, you know, Mark Price filled that role in Charlotte, and they had some success with him there before he went back to college. But the one, I remember one thing, we were sitting courtside before a Spurs game, and I was talking with R.C. Buford about Chip was out working with a player. And just like in short, what is it about him and his ability? And he just said his patience with maybe not seeing immediate results and being able to play the long game with a player, and that's as much of his gift. And that's where a lot of the shooting is that it's not going to look different in a week, 2 weeks, a month, 3 months, that you've really got to play a long game with it.
I think there's a lot of truth to that. I feel that he, Chip, was as good as I've been around and really would have taught me something, where it's not a cookie cutter thing where everybody, you know, has to shoot the same way. I think he can take somebody's shot, understand the mechanics of somebody's particular body type, and, you know, end up with the same type of result of either hand positioning or release point or how you unlock your hips with the, are you toes to the rim or are you going to sort of off center it a little bit and unlock your hips. He would take somebody's shot and judge it for what it was and make the minor adjustments to make it a hell of a lot better. It wasn't like everybody's going to do it the same way. And I think that, along with the relational side where people, you know, felt comfortable with him, he could reference so many players as we all get older that he's helped. It's a powerful combination, the judgment, the relational side, the history of the success that he's had, and it made him for what he is. You know, he's a hell of an asset for the Spurs organization.
Guys, I have a question for you. What if hiring could be easier, more streamlined, and less time-consuming? So even when you're busy, you could still be smart about the way you hire. With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards with just one click, so you can rest easy knowing your job is being seen by the right candidates. Then ZipRecruiter puts its smart matching technology to work, actively notifying qualified candidates about your job within minutes of posting, so you receive the best possible matches. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other hiring sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on the right candidates finding you. It finds them. You can even get a head start on the interview process by adding screening questions to your job post to help identify the most qualified candidates, so you don't have to waste time sorting through a stack of resumes to find the perfect fit. No wonder 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. And the easy-to-use ZipRecruiter dashboard lets you manage your hiring process from start to finish all in one place. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, my listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Woj. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Woj, W-O-J. One more time to try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/Woj. I'm not sure you ever quite imagined when you took the job in Philly. No one could have imagined all the different ways you're going to be tested and your different strengths, weaknesses are going to be tested based on how this all has gone. But when you think of it, has been non-traditional in the way you've had your star players, your high picks have come in. It hasn't just been we draft them high, they come, they go to summer league, they play, and we integrate them. There's been injuries. There's been, you know, what you're going through with Markel Fultz. Now, has this been a job, and like we just talked about with spending a year watching tape, the way you're watching tape with Fultz now, what you did with Ben Simmons, what you did for 2 years with Joel, that it may not have been the worst thing to be the son of a teacher coming into this, that this became almost a teaching job. When people view the NBA, I think, as managing, this has been teaching.
It has been, and I think if you had told me like this was going to be the path when you first took the job, you know, now I'm in my fifth year, you know, you really would have had to have thought, how do you best now to plan to handle it and do the job? Because it hasn't sort of gone to plan as you originally thought when you accepted the position. And I feel like, you know, son of two school teachers, I hope that helps. I think being a parent, I hope that helps. I hope being 56 years old and not, you know, my first job, I think that helps. And I hope that, like, the temperance and the ability to try to do the best job you can teaching, to fully commit to relationships, to fully commit to everybody develops in different ways, to having some level of balance with all of this, just to hold everything together and move us forward as best you could. It's an accumulation of, you know, life experiences that I feel comfortable doing what I'm doing here. And crazy, as I've said to you and many others, I love it. Like, I love the challenge of it. I do feel a heck of a lot better when you see the daylight with some talent that we have. But this journey has not sort of gone on as you would have guessed it would have when you first took the job.
What's the responsibility maybe of a head coach, an organization, teammates, in trying to guide Joel and Ben Simmons toward what it means to be a franchise player? Not just production on the court, but what goes into it off the court, the responsibilities that a young player does not know exist until they have to fulfill them. Is that almost a new stage of your progression here now? Is now that they're on the court, they're producing at a high level, we can all evaluate where it's going with them and what they'll be. Now you have to do what?
I mean, the leadership word is a little bit like culture to me. It's a very, it's missed. Is what is it? Like what really is leadership? And to quantify that as best I can to those two players especially, in two ways. How do they lead as individuals, and how do they lead as a partnership? Because if we've learned anything, is great players need great players. They need each other. And they're going to need more as time unfolds and you truly try to build a championship type program. And so when you step back and say, what usually are some of the qualities of the great leaders? It's always derived out of respect. You know, and then you say, well, what equals respect? You show up on time. You work hard. You have a complete understanding that we all need to help others. We really got to find time to understand, how do you help other people move forward? And I think invariably you end up helping yourself. And so growing those two guys, we get who you are on a court. We will continue to polish up your basketball skills. But I would say very transparently and very candidly, that isn't what's most on my mind. In fact, at times it's not even close. And, you know, we talk freely. We talk freely I talk freely with both those guys together individually and coexisting and dealing with social media and, you know, all the normal things you would expect me to say. But it can't just be expected. Like, you got to coach that side of it like you'd coach how do you guard a middle pick and roll. And it's something that I don't dismiss. It's something that I'm always thinking about.
Do you ever cringe when Joel is out in social media, in interviews, talking about competitors, going after guys verbally? Do you just accept that's who he is? Or do you say, we've got to evaluate if that's a long-term way to exist in this league?
You know, we talk about it all the time. And, you know, it's that slippery slope because that's not who I am. Like, he's way out there. And, you know, I haven't felt like he's crossed the line and hurt the team. And, you know, there's a maverick in him. There's a mischiefness in him. There is, you know, he wants to shake it up and that helps get him going. And I feel like, you know, my role is to make sure that it doesn't like hurt the team or hurt others. And there are times that I actually do smile. Like, I think that he's got a very keen sense of humor. But it isn't, as I said to you a moment ago, that's not, you know, my style. But in relation to squashing it or really trying to, you know, prohibit it, I don't do that. If it crossed the line, if it really crossed the line, we'd talk seriously about it. To date, I haven't felt like I have had to. And I think in a twisted way, sometimes his teammates, they feed off it too. I know he feeds off it. And it really does make him own things and make him, you know, have to probably perform at such a higher level because he's been the aggressor.
And sometimes it can take pressure off of teammates when it's putting attention on you. If you can handle that burden, you can't be taking pressure off your teammates in those instances.
I think that's true. You know, and he doesn't back away from anything. It's he's got a rare combination of this incredible sort of frame at 7'2" and a, you know, a smorgasbord, a variety of ways to score, all wrapped up in this like highly competitive person. And really, when you look at what he's done, because he effectively hasn't practiced, you know, we are moving him forward where he'll get on a normal routine like his teammates are on, where you're just like a normal part of the moving parts of a team. Right now, that hasn't happened. We've done everything that we can to deliver him to the court on game night. He's obviously a participant in film sessions and some walkthroughs. But I think when he's actually practicing and getting his cardio and his basketball rhythm down, like, I think, look out. Like, he has been really quite strong to date just, you know, because he's that good. I think when he starts draping practices and being with the team more and practicing with his teammates more, then the upside is off the charts.
Early on, you know, he got to know Tim Duncan a little bit, and I know you share things all the time, and he and I talked, I think, season before last about some of the early contact with Tim. I think for anybody who's been in San Antonio, Tim is the standard for what leadership is. And yet, as sort of Spurs disciples go off into the world, he can be the standard, but it's, you know, you realize there's only one Tim Duncan and no one else can be that. He may as good of a teammate as the league's had. And is that a challenge early of your definition of what a franchise guy should be, what a great teammate should be, but not everybody's the same. And other guys have different personalities, but there's still core things that are just important and we can't win without them that you learn from being around Tim, Manu. Is that a challenge in trying to incorporate it in a different place? Because they're not the same people.
Well, it's true. And in that, therein lies life. Like, we're not all sort of wired the same way, and trying to take the good in people and put that good in a position where they can influence and succeed. And also taking the things that need work and, you know, admitting them and trying to grow people. You know, I think that when you start talking about leadership with Ben or Joe, we always talk about, you know, you can't sort of lose before you win. And losing means just the standards of how you act, you know, and just the promptness of professionalism and time. And those peripheral things, that's why we all respect whoever we respect. Everybody down deep wants to be coached hard. They want to be made to show up on time. They want a system that has law and order. People may cringe about it or squirm about it, but down deep, they want to feel a part of that. And I feel, you know, as coach of the team, like, that's always on my mind. And so growing these guys with that vision line and that spirit, you know, whether you're Tim Duncan or Kobe Bryant or Joel Embiid, you know, take who you are. It's cool. It's fine. And let me coach them and let me steer them with those common places that all of them have, disregarding what their personality is, that you can't sort of lose before you win.
Buying tickets online for sports and concerts has never been easier thanks to SeatGeek. They've created an amazing app and website that makes ticket buying easier than it's ever been. They pull all the tickets available on other sites into one place, so you never miss a deal, and more importantly, you aren't wasting time. You can even set alerts for upcoming events, and they'll let you know if ticket prices fall. And even better, every ticket on SeatGeek is ranked based on value, so you can immediately find underpriced seats. And before you buy, you can use SeatGeek's detailed maps to see the view from your seat. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and I use it all the time. SeatGeek is always honest and upfront about the price. You get to see the full ticket price from start to finish, and they never surprise you with big fees when you check out. Now, here's the best part about SeatGeek for all of you out there listening to the Woj Pod. My listeners who make their first SeatGeek purchase get a $20 rebate. And to get it, all you have to do is download the free SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab and click add a promo code, then enter promo code WOJ. SeatGeek will then send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. It does not get any easier than that. So download the free SeatGeek app and enter promo code WOJ, W-O-J, today. I remember sitting with you in Summer League, I think 2 years ago, right after Manu had re-signed with the Spurs and the Sixers had made a pretty spirited run to get him in free agency. Came closer than I think people imagined they did, and the Spurs, you forced San Antonio to raise their offer of what they had on the table. And I remember you saying to me it was over and he had re-signed with the Spurs. And you said you felt like you had a little bit of lipstick on your collar that you had cheated. Because I know you had talked to Pop then about, hey, we're going to kind of – what do you remember about sort of the thought of what he could have – it's obvious what he could have brought. But thinking back to that whole process, was it unlike anything you have gone through in this job?
It was awful. It was truly awful because I had been with Manu from day dot in the NBA. And I had seen Manu play as a teenager in Melbourne, Australia. And the level of respect that I have for that man, forget the basketball player, is immense. And so now you go to, you know, you're the head coach of the Philadelphia 76ers, and Manu Ginobili's a free agent. And, you know, he and I have a strong relationship and one that I know he can still play. And I know what he would mean to help produce the culture that I would want. And so you speak freely, both with RC and with Pop. Those are two of my closest friends in life. And, you know, I go through it in RC because it's his job to like hold the team and construct the team. There was definitely a little bit of friction there, no doubt. And Pop was amazing. As we'd all expect Pop, if Manu Ginobili can truly benefit significantly, like he would have coming to Philadelphia and accepting our offer, then you have to do your job. And, you know, on one sense, like that's all I needed to like move forward and try to get Manu Ginobili in Philadelphia. On another sense, you did. You felt like you had lipstick on your collar and I was doing something terrible, you know. And to this day, I don't feel like entirely 100% comfortable about what happened. But, you know, that's what we ended up doing. And yesterday I texted Manu and Pop and said I knew he was worth the money we were offering after I see him break the Celtics back with that step back rainbow, you know, a dagger. But I'm glad it moved on. I truly am glad to see him in a Spurs uniform, and in my heart of hearts, that's where he should be. And I feel better about that.
There was a night, maybe more than one night, that you went to bed thinking, we're getting him.
Oh, right? Yeah. No doubt, you know, and because it was that, you know, sort of confirmed. And, you know, things change as I thought it would almost go that way. But you get excited and you trick yourself to think, well, I'll be damned. Like he's actually coming to Philadelphia. And, like I say, as it's played out, I think it's played out just as it should have. He can end his career right probably where he should be. And, you know, life moves on. And the bottom line is Pop and RC, we all still have a good laugh about it. And I'm glad that it's over. I will tell you that.
What you guys have had to do with Markelle Fultz this year, the shoulder now, there's a sense that there's been healing and now it's getting him back into game shape and ready to be able to return, whether it's in a few weeks or a month, whatever it's going to be. Has it been just very similar to other processes with guys who have been out here, or have there been some things there, not just physically getting him back, but mentally? Hey, you're the number one overall pick and you're getting mocked because your shot looks a certain way and you can't shoot the ball from outside 15 and people are labeling you very quickly. That is a lot for a teenager to handle. Has that been as much as your sort of the mental side as it's been physically with him? Because this has just been a unique thing.
A little bit. I think none of us can truly dismiss the connection of the dots of a obvious injury, how it affected his shot. And to then have to go out as the number one pick and play NBA basketball, you know, at 19 years old and have that be visual and be visible to the world as they're watching you shoot, like, what the heck is that? That isn't your shot. that's different than anything I went through with any of our guys. You know, Ben was out for the year. Joel was out for two. Nerlens was out for a year. Markell has been probably the most complicated, in some ways, interesting in others, situation that I've ever had to deal with as a coach. Because you're the first player chosen, you're 19 years old, you actually come in, you know, play a little basketball, then it's obvious that there's a problem with your shoulder and hence your shot. And so how do we sort of reclaim all that? Surely there would be, you know, anxiety. His heart is so much in the right place. He wants to please. You know, he wants to perform. And Philadelphia is a tough city. And so you add in all those types of things into, you know, a 19-year-old's mind. I'm sure, like, you know, anxiety dances. You know, I'm sure that part of it is stuff that has to creep in. And so when you ask me about, you know, the mental side or, you know, the physical side, or what do you do in the meantime? How do we replicate all the things we've learned, you know, in video classrooms to help grow Markell and diet and nutrition and all that type of stuff? He is on as comprehensive a plan as we've ever had, because he is reaping the benefits of everything we've learned with all the other first round, you know, draft picks we've had that have been injured for a year. And so we don't see it like that. We're continuing to grow all the things you know we would. And ultimately, like we've said, you know, we're gonna see the fluidity of his shot when he can rise up and be Markell Fultz. I think, you know, that'll be his comfort level and probably very close to the decision on when does he return to play.
To me, one of my favorite coaching trivia questions in the league is, who are the two NBA coaches from Maine, right? Steve Clifford from Charlotte and Brett Brown. And Steve has been out here for several days just taking care of medically, just trying to get some things in order, and has been away. And your dad is a coach, was a coach, and you've spent your life in it. And Steve worked for your dad at Boston University and St. Anselm's,
That's
right?
That's correct.
At both places.
Good memory.
Right. So Steve's been, you've known him forever. And you also know the stress of this job and what it can do to you. In lots of ways, it can impact you physically, emotionally. And seeing Steve dealing with what he's dealing with and knowing the profession, do coaches talk enough among themselves about it? Do coaches deal with it? Has it always been for you, as you've grown older in the profession, that it's important to do everything you can to make sure you are taking care of things because it can pile up on you?
I mean, yes is the short answer. The first sort of example of what you're speaking of that quickly comes to my mind is years ago when I coached in Australia, Rick Majerus came and he got to know a big kid in Melbourne named Andrew Bogut. And we had seen Andrew Bogut play, and you could tell right away, like, apart from his size, he was so gifted. Gosh, was he skilled, and he was highly competitive. And when I was with Rick Majerus in Melbourne, I got to know him. We started talking. He talked about, you know, his health. Like, he's always was aware of his own health. And the fact that as coaches, we're always in a position to tell other people, like, what to do. You get used to, like, instructing and coaching and telling and all that. And his comment was like, well, and he was talking to himself, like, what about me? Like, how do I coach myself? And with all of us, you know, you just, all this stuff we talk to our team about with nutrition and hydration and sleep, we are at the forefront of cutting edge sports science. And we have all this amazing information that we have available to us that we share with 20-year-olds and our NBA players. And it's really true for all of us. And so 82 games, you don't get too much sleep. There is a high level of anxiety. You understand, like, if you don't have your mind and if you don't have, like, sleep to have your mind sharp, you really are hurting the program. And, like, that's just the information that we have for the players. And so I think all of us coaches, we talk more freely when we're in Chicago. The Coaches Association does provide a lot of good things. But it's a stressful job. We all got to coach ourselves. And at the end of the day, like, it really does revolve around your health and all those pieces that relate to health that we share with our players.
Brett, you've got a game to get ready for. There's always another one coming. Thanks for taking time, as always.
Yeah, always good to speak to you, Woj.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Woj Pod. A big thank you to my guest today, 76ers coach Brett Brown. Remember, you can subscribe and listen to new and archived episodes wherever you get your podcast. You can find us on Apple Podcasts. You can also hear the Woj Pod every Wednesday and Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern on Sirius XM Satellite Radio, on Sirius Channel 214, XM Channel 203, and on the Sirius XM app on Channel 967. I'd also like to take a moment to thank today's sponsors, SeatGeek and ZipRecruiter. We'll catch you next time.